All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and I am here to give you my rapid reaction to the Falcons 22-10 win over the Carolina Panthers to clinch their spot in the postseason, to cap off this 2017 regular season and go into the playoffs.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me, the guy that botches these intros. I am Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon fan sites on the internet. And we are going to do a rapid reaction to the Falcons' 22-10 win over these Panthers, clinching their spot in the postseason, all set to go. But first, I want to mention that we do give away a Pro Football Focus Edge subscription on the Locked On Podcast Network. With that, you can get player grades, snap counts, position rankings, fantasy projections, rankings, tools and charts, NFL draft coverage, and much, much more. We give that away. That's a $40 value. We give that away to anybody, or not to anybody, but to one lucky listener each week that goes and leaves a review on Locked On Falcons iTunes page. You give a 5-star review. You leave your Twitter handle in the review. You will be entered into winning that Pro Football Focus as subscription. One lucky winner will be picked at random to win that subscription. If you do not win the subscription, then you can still check out the great Pro Football Focus content on the Locked On Podcast Network. Checking out Mike Renner on Locked On NFL every Wednesday. You can check out Jeff Ratcliffe on Locked On Fantasy Football every Thursday. All right, let's get into it, guys. It was a big win for the Falcons, obviously. As you guys know, I was not particularly confident about the Falcons' chances heading into this game. I'll explain why, because I think some of the things that they did well, and one of the reasons why they won, because they did things that I was not confident that they would do well, they actually did well. You know, we've known this offense particularly to struggle against the better caliber defenses they face this year. Going into this week against teams in terms of DVOA rankings that were in the bottom 16 this year, currently in the bottom 16 this year, the Falcons have a 7-1 record. Obviously, that means going in the top 16 teams prior to Sunday, they were 2-4. And, you know, 1-3 against top 10 teams in DVOA defensive rankings. Panthers ranked 8th entering week 17. So it was one of those things where it's like, you know, those odds, those records tell me that the chances of the Falcons winning this game are not as good as I would like them to be. And I didn't have a lot of confidence that Steve Sarkisian would be able to put together a winning game plan against this tough Panthers team, even if the Falcons were completely healthy and given some of the injuries that they had, particularly along the interior offensive line, the fact that they didn't have a second tight end really to speak of. It just seemed like, you know, so much of their offense is predicated on their ability to run the football and to build off of that with the play action passing game, which is how they generate big plays. And as longtime listeners of this podcast know, I'm a big believer that if you want to score a lot of points, you got to generate a lot of big plays. And if this team can't run the football and then use play action to generate those big plays, it's going to be a struggle for them to put points on the board. And that was really one of the reasons why I was not very confident. However, you could say that even if, you know, the Falcons didn't put together a great game plan in terms of putting up a lot of points, but they were bailed out by Matt Money Bryant kicking 5 field goals today. So even if they weren't able to put the offense itself wasn't able to necessarily finish off drives and cap them off, the special teams in terms of Bryant's leg was able to pick them up and sort of keep them going throughout the remainder of this game. Now, going back to Sark, I didn't have a lot of confidence, again, due to the injuries. Mack, Schweitzer, and Lavitre all did start this game. Lavitre, I think, left the game in the first series or at the beginning of the second series, seemed to re-aggravate his triceps injury. You know, I'm not very confident that we'll see him at any point the rest of the year. You know, the next time we see Andy Lavitre, well, you know, I expect him to come back in 2018, but, you know, we'll figure that out later as this week goes along. So Ben Garland sort of stepped in at left guard and finished out the rest of the game. And the Falcons really couldn't run the ball all that effectively throughout this game. And, you know, because they couldn't run the ball effectively, it was hard for them to generate big plays. Now, they did finish with 3 20-plus-yard plays against Carolina. But it was interesting, was all of them, if I'm not mistaken, were shorter throws, short and intermediate passes that guys were able to turn into 20-plus-yard gains due to their ability after the catch. I think Hooper had one, Julio had one, and I think Devontae had one. And it's those types of things that, you know, we talk quite a bit on this podcast and on Twitter and all that type of stuff about the lack of execution that's been holding back this Falcons offense. And while I do think that is true, it's those types of things that I don't think people give enough credit that my personal opinion is I sometimes think, and particularly on Sunday in terms of certain aspects of this game, I sometimes think it's more that the Falcons' execution is holding up this offense more so than it's holding it, the lack of it, the drop passes and all that type of stuff are holding it back. Like a good example of that was we saw in this game, the sort of the two sides of the coin. There was in the third quarter, an opening drive of the third quarter for the Falcons, there was a 3rd-and-1, and Ryan Schrader was flagged for a false start. And that pushed the Falcons back 5 yards. And of course, you're all like, oh my God. Oh, what's, you know, the lack of discipline, the lack of execution, ruining the Falcons' chance. But then on the 3rd-and-6, you have Matt Ryan step up in the pocket, in a muddy pocket, find time, find a window to throw to Julio on a crossing pattern. That play, you know, without sort of that sort of Matt Ryan doing that thing and buying himself extra time doesn't work. And so I do think sometimes we talk so much about the lack of execution, but it's those types of plays. And it seems like, you know, again, this is perception, which is always tends to be false in a lot of cases, but it seems like there's been a lot more of those types of plays where it's, you know, Matt Ryan or Julio Jones or whoever it is, Devontae Freeman making that cut and turning a 2 yard gain into a 6 yard gain or whatever the case may be, or a 15 yard gain. And, we don't give this offense enough credit, and particularly the personnel, enough credit for making those types of plays. And that's what I'm talking about, where, like, I certainly think the lack of execution is holding this offense back in a lot of ways, but I also think the abundance of execution is also propping up this team. You know, I do want to talk about the play calling, but first, I want to mention that those pesky Atlanta Hawks have won 3 out of our last 4 games. You guys should probably go over and check out Brad Rowland, the host of Locked On Hawks, part of the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network, wherever podcasts can be found. So let's talk about the play calling for a minute. And as I say most weeks on this podcast, I don't know if Sark called a really good game or a really poor game or whatever. We'll have to find out when I go back and watch the film. But I want to give Sark some credit. And again, I'll confirm this when I rewatch the film later this week. But it did seem like to me that the Falcons made the adjustment, I think the adjustment they needed to make, and were very pass heavy in this game. And I think the reason why they were pass heavy, because they knew they couldn't run the ball against the Panthers. They didn't really even try to run the football against the Panthers. And I don't blame them for not. Like, they were, the Panthers completely shut down their running game the last time they played. And they were fully healthy then. And then you have Mac, Lavitre, and Schweitzer all beat up. You don't have a number two tight end, right? They had to play Sam Brelo and Saubert there, which, you know, they basically threw out the two tight end sets in their offense for the most part. Again, we'll see what the film and the snap count say. But, you know, it was all set up. If they put this on their running game to be like, we're going to pound the ball down the Panthers' throat, that to me was a game plan that was doomed to fail. So I will give Sark that sort of credit. I think they replaced their running game with the short passing game, and that was something that I think they really had to do. Matt Ryan had 45 pass attempts in this game. According to the game book, only 5 of them were deep throws, which in the official NFL.com game books, they only count deep throws that are 15-yard throws that are in the air for more than 15 yards. Matt Ryan, of course, was 0 for 5 on those deep throws. And from my perspective, I think some of the scoring slump after that opening series where the Falcons marched down the field, converted 2 third downs, and scored, I think was more on Matt Ryan than it was on Sarkisian, at least from what I could tell. Again, we'll find out what the tape says. But it did seem like anytime the Falcons went back and he tried to attempt a pass that was more than like 12 yards downfield, he missed the throw. There was a couple of times, I can't remember what series it was, whether it was the 2nd or 3rd series or something like that. It was early in the game where it looked like the Falcons had dialed up a deep shot and Matt Ryan didn't pull the trigger and he chucked it down. Again, without seeing the All-22, I don't know if there was an open receiver, but there's been enough times this season where I've seen Matt Ryan not pull the trigger on those types of throws that make me skeptical to give him the benefit of the doubt in these instances. And so, you know, like, to me, a lot of the issues were on the quarterback early in the game. Now, to be fair to Matt Ryan, I think he played lights out in the second half of this game, particularly in the opening series in the third quarter. And, you know, That play that I would describe where he stepped up and found Julio Jones for a 15-yard gain over the middle was on that series. And there was a number of other plays where he used his legs not only to make plays, he juked Luke Kuechly out of his shoes, but he also buyed himself other time. Then he capped off that drive, or we thought he capped off that drive, with a dime to Mohamed Sanu, hit him back shoulder. It was well covered by Luke Kuechly, but he just sort of threaded the needle in that throw. You know, the word dime is thrown around a lot these days. I don't think it always applies. I think it rarely ever applies to the throws that Matt Ryan makes typically. But that one was indeed one. That was one of the better throws he's made all year. And for some reason, he always seems to do that. Like, for some reason, like, his best throws tend to be like red zone throws to Mohamed Sanu. It's weird to me. I don't know. Maybe those are just the only ones I ever remember, but it just seems like those like 12-yard throws to Mohamed Sanu in the end zone tend to be Matt Ryan's best throws. I digress. That catch, though, was reviewed because the ball moved when Sanu didn't complete the catch. You know, all that nonsense. You know, speaking, side note, the officiating, you know, you guys know my stance on the officiating. I'm not going to get too mad at it. But, like, this game illustrates to me, like, the problems with the officiating. Not necessarily because the refs did anything wrong, but just because, like, the rules are so convoluted. Like, you know, completing the catch. Then we had that debacle at the end of the first half where the Falcons had to hit Hooper over the middle. That might have been the big play to Hooper. Hit Hooper over the middle. And then they tried to run up and spike it real quick. They seemed to spike it with 1 second left, but you couldn't really tell live. But the replay seemed to show it. But they couldn't go to the replay because they could only go to the replay if there's 2 seconds left on the clock, not 1 second. Like, how does that rule? And we talk about the arbitrary, overly complex rules that football, professional football has. Like, that is a personification. Like, what? How does that make any sense? 2 seconds versus 1 second? Like, what? And so this is part of the reason why, like, who knows what these rules are, man? Like imagine being an NFL official and you have to know stuff like that. Like, how does that make any sense? Like, nothing makes sense. Your brain must be just a mishmash of just nonsense when you're contemplating the NFL rule book. So, you know, I'll defend the refs as far as that goes because it's just ridiculous with some of these rules. Yeah. Sorry. I got a little bit of a rant. You know I have to rant about something on this show. So overall, I don't think it was a great day for the offense, but I do think Sark was trying to do some things, making adjustments, playing away from the team's seeming weaknesses and playing to the Panthers' strengths by trying to run the ball up the middle. You know, that people were complaining on Twitter about too many tosses. I'm like, well, you can't really run outside zone because the linchpin of your outside zone and Alex Mack has a bad leg. You know, and so it's one of those things, like there were a number of plays in the game where I saw them trying to get Alex Mack to get downfield, and he was like the slowest guy trying to get downfield. Garland, like when Schweitzer's beating you downfield, you know there's something wrong, or especially when Schweitzer's beating Alex Mack downfield. Not to say Schweitzer's slow, but he's certainly not as quick as Alex Mack is. So I think that's a lot. That explains a lot of the Falcons making adjustments. So I'll give Sark credit. You know, again, we'll see what the tape says. Freeman and Coleman both had finished the game with 11 carries for 23 yards. So clearly the Falcons weren't able to run the ball. The longest run of the day was 6 yards by Coleman, from the running backs at least. So I think Sark did a good job putting an emphasis on the quick passing game. You know, we talked about this during the offseason quite a bit when there were questions about how good is Wes Schweitzer. And my response always was like, you know, well, a good play caller can make an adjustment for one bad offensive lineman. And it's only when you have two or three or bad offensive linemen, look at the Giants or the Seahawks, where starting with the play caller can't make enough adjustments to sort of offset one bad guy, one liability, or whatever you want to call it. And so, again, I think the Falcons did a good job using their quick passing game to offset the fact that they didn't have a strong interior offensive line. They had a backup, and they had two injured starters. And then one of those injured starters is sort of the key piece to their entire running game. And the other one is Schweitzer, who's very up and down. And then, you know, you got KK Short and Star Latulele and Vernon Butler in the middle. It's like, why would we run the ball at those guys? That makes no sense. Now, in a moment, I do want to switch gears and talk about the defense. But I want to remind you guys that there's always interesting things going on elsewhere on the Locked On Podcast Network. Maybe you're curious to hear an interview of former Kansas City Chiefs running back Larry Johnson over at Locked On Chiefs, hosted by Ryan Tracy and Chris Clark. So another reason why I wasn't very confident going into this game was I thought that we talked about this with Bill Rossetti on Friday's preview episode, but I thought the defense needed to play at a really high level to win this game, create some turnovers, give the offense numerous more opportunities to get some possessions, and they did that. I wasn't confident that they would be able to do that. I knew that they were capable of doing it just because the Panthers are a team that can be pretty hit and miss with the turnovers. But the problem was the last couple of games, they've been very good at avoiding turnovers and creating turnovers themselves, as opposed to earlier in the season when it was more of a flip-flop. And so it was one of those things where, you know, the other thing I said on that podcast was like, I think I said it, but the team that could run the ball most effectively would be the team that would win. Technically, I was wrong about it because the Panthers had more rushing yards. But then when you just only factor in the running backs, Jonathan Stewart did not play in this game. The Falcons actually won in that regard. So, you know, technically, you know, you can twist it and say I was right about that. You know, I need to, you know, you guys got to give me this. I haven't been too right on the Falcons lately. So I have to take every tiny, eensy, teensy win I get. But no, going back to the turnovers, the Falcons were +3 on turnover margin. They Robert Alford capped off the game with a pick at the end. You got a Keanu Neal pick off of a tip, very Willie Moe-esque, you know, pretty much all of Willie Moe's picks were just like tip passes, and he just happened to be in the right place at the right time. Ricardo Allen had a tip on an overthrow. So those three turnovers led to 6 points for the Falcons offense. You know, the Falcons also dominated time of possession in the third quarter, 11 and a half minutes to 3.5 minutes, thanks to 2 3 and outs and that interception by Ricardo Allen. As well, you know, that's something that we haven't seen really at all this season. It seems like the third quarter is the worst time for both the offense and the defense. Really, the only series where the Panthers really got anything worthwhile going, you know, until like the fourth quarter when, you know, they were down 9 points. It was that last series in the second quarter where, you know, they held the ball for 8.5 minutes. They went on a 16-play drive. They converted like 3 third downs on that drive, I think. I think they were like 3 or 4 on third downs, and then they were 1 of 1 on fourth down conversions that drive. The Falcons gave up a 3rd and 23. Brian Poole failed to get deep enough on, you know, they were playing cover 3 zone, and he was supposed to cover the flat, but he didn't get enough depth. So Brinson Burson, or whatever that dude's name is, settled in into the soft spot of the zone behind him for a 27-yard gain, and the Panthers converted a 3rd and 23 that set up their only touchdown of the game. And it's like, it's those types of plays, man. It's like, oh my God, this defense, man. Like, it's so frustrating. Like, they played so well, and it's just like those types of mental errors always seem to prevent this team from being like, what? Brian Poole, man, it's a 3rd and 23. Why are you so intent on covering the 1 yard check down in the flat? Like, get some depth on your drop, dude. It's a 3rd and 23, man. It's stuff like that that's always preventing me from fully embracing this defense. But they did, other outside of that drive, you know, they always seem to give up one of these monster drives every single game. But outside of that drive, they play really well. Outside of that series, the Panthers, I think, only converted 2 of 11 third downs in the game. Cam Newton was really off the mark. I don't know how much credit I can give to the defense for Cam Newton just being scattershot with his accuracy. You know, that's not a new development with Cam, but even for regular scattershot Cam, today was a rough game. Makes me think that he was injured because you only really see him just sail past it. I mean, he started the game 0-for-9. Like, that's terrible. Like, I don't know. Maybe he's nursing an injury or something. I don't know. There was some pressure, but not a huge amount to really justify why Cam started so poorly in this game. You know, he didn't complete his first pass until the start of that 16-play drive, which was midway through the second quarter. But it was also, you know, I think credit to the defense for not really letting off the gas in the second half of the game. Typically, you know, they get off to these good starts, and then all of a sudden the other team climbs back into it and makes it close at the end. It seemed like a couple of times the Panthers were on the verge of that, but the Falcons got stops. You know, some of that was due to Cam missing some throws. Some of that was due to turnovers, et cetera. But we'll take what we can get with this defense, as you guys well know. So now the Falcons are in the playoffs, which is good to see. You know, again, I was not very confident when I woke up this morning today about the Falcons. You know, I was all ready to pack it in for the offseason. But, you know, this type of win, even though it wasn't the best performance of the Falcons this season, you know, a complete performance like we saw against Dallas or whatnot. It was one of the better performances we've seen from this team, particularly with the defense really stepping up. They seem to do this in the month of December every year. I guess that's just going to be the new MO for the Falcons defense. We see their best football in December as opposed to September and October and whatnot. But yeah, you know, this is what the point I'm trying to get to is this type of game is it energizes. At least, you know, a pessimist like me who's always like, whatever, Falcons, you know. So I was like, they started off strong and then they went into that offensive slump. And I'm like, here we go. Here come the Panthers coming back. Classic Falcons. You look so good and they're going to let the Panthers get back in this game. But they didn't do it. And so, you know, hats off to the Falcons. So I'm going to my New Year's Eve festivities riding high, you know. We'll see what Monday morning looks like. But pretty short turnaround. The Falcons will be playing the Rams on Saturday evening on NBC. And, you know, one is a little bit concerned due to that, you know, short turnaround with one less day of rest, that some of the guys that were a little nicked up in today's game or didn't miss this game may not be able to come back. So the Falcons may be dealing with some injuries. And of course, you don't want to have interior offensive line injuries when a guy like Aaron Donald is lining up across from you. So that's going to be a huge, huge factor in this game. Lavitre, you know, as I said at the top of the show, I don't expect Lavitre to play. I don't expect you just ice down. He played like, what, five snaps or something like that? Or probably was more than that. But it seemed like he only played like a series, maybe a series and a half worth of games. And if he re-aggravated the injury and wasn't able to come back, I don't expect him to suddenly be like, okay, I'm good to go now this week, because he was already limited this past week. Andre Roberts got nicked up, but it seemed like they just taped up his ankle and he came back in. Julio took a big shot to the ribs early in the game, but he did come back in later. There was a moment during the game that was kind of bizarre because no one knew what was going on. They showed Adrian Claiborne crying on the sideline, and there was a mention that he had some sort of ankle injury that was getting looked at. And it was weird, like, is he crying because he's not going to be able, he's done for the season? Like, it was Achilles tear or something? But from what I understand, I think he did come back later in the game. So I don't know. I guess we'll get some clarification on that or something like that. You know, Mac, calf strain. Hopefully, you know, there was just a one-week injury, but the fact that he had to gut through this doesn't make me super, super confident that he's going to be a full participant in practice this week. Same thing with Schweitzer. Gabriel hurt his hamstring on the opening punt on working as a gunner. I still don't understand why the Falcons refused to put Justin Hardy back there as a gunner. He was the gunner up through the Seahawks game, and then since then, it's just been the Marvin Hall show. And then when Marvin Hall was inactive today, they started out Gabriel there. And then when Gabriel got hurt, they put DeMonte Casey there. I don't get it. Never understand what Keith Armstrong is doing half the time, but you know, he's the coach and we'll figure it out. I don't know. Toilolo's probably not coming back this week, given the MCL tear is usually like a 3 to 4 week injury or an MCL strain or whatever the heck it is. But I'm not expecting him to be just miss one game and come back. So the preliminary scouting report on this Rams game is we're going to have to shut down Gurley. I think the best way of doing that is not expecting the Falcons defense to hold up against Gurley, but to hope that the Falcons offense comes out firing out of the gates early and forces the Rams to become one-dimensional in the second half of this game and force Goff to have to throw the ball, you know, 40-plus times. And if that's the case, I think that's puts the Falcons in an advantageous situation. Doesn't mean that they're guaranteed to win, but I think that's the best way of doing it. So we'll see, you know. The concern about the Rams is they're the league's number one scoring offense in the league. And I don't think they got past this week because I don't think they only scored 13 against the 49ers, but I think they were comfortable enough with that lead at the number one spot. So if this gets into a shootout, it doesn't really bode well, you know, who you're going to put money on, the number one scoring offense or the number 15 scoring offense in the league. I'll probably put the money on the number one scoring offense. So I think, you know, this needs to be a defensive, you know, a good start for the Falcons, a good defensive effort from the Falcons. And, you know, we saw that on Sunday. We just didn't see it continue on Sunday today as I'm recording this final episode of 2017. You guys will be listening to it as the first episode of 2018. I digress. So our schedule opening up 2018 is going to be recap show tomorrow, all 22 review on Wednesday. And I'll answer any questions you guys send me. Thursday and Friday, Well, one of those will be a preview episode. It's possible we might do two preview episodes just because it's the playoffs and we need to go in on this matchup. And we don't really know a whole lot about the Rams. I certainly don't, because I haven't been paying that much attention to them this season. I know they've been doing well, but, you know, it's just sort of like from afar. So two preview episodes is a possibility down the pipeline on both Thursday and Friday. We'll see. If you want your questions to be answered on Wednesday's show, on Wednesday's All 22 Q&A, by all means, you can send them in. And as usual, I will only answer enough to fill out a 30-minute episode, and the rest will be leftovers that I post on LockedOnFalcons.com. Because it's a shorter week and we have a game on Saturday, that means I'll probably have to post them a day earlier on Friday than I normally would, which means there's a decent chance that I completely missed that window, because the last couple of Fridays I haven't even thought about writing those episodes. But, you know, that's a peek behind the curtain, because I'm a horrible procrastinator. But if you want to send those questions in, of course, you can use Twitter. My Twitter handle is FalcFans. The show's Twitter handle is Locked On Falcons. If you want to send it to FalcFans, just let me know it's show-related. But if you just send it to Locked On Falcons, I will automatically know it's a show-related question. If you don't like Twitter character limits, then you can always check out Facebook, who has nearly limitless character limits. The show is Locked On Falcons on Facebook. You can also email, which has zero character limits. That's LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Of course, you can leave comments on FalcFans.com and LockedOnFalcons.com, where the show is posted daily. So, guys, we're not going to turn our attention to the postseason the off season quite yet. You know, we'll get there eventually, as always. But hopefully we can extend that a couple more weeks. So I'm excited to see what the Falcons do this upcoming weekend. I'm not going to get my hopes up too high right now. I'm just glad they made the playoffs. If they're one and done, you know, I'm not going to be happy about that or thrilled about that. That's not what I'm rooting for. But, you know, I'm just happy that they were able to avoid the hangover, quote, so to speak, and make the playoffs. You know, if they're one and done, then so be it. If they beat the Rams, which I think they're fully capable of doing, you know, they just gotta stop Todd Gurley and block Aaron Donald. Easier said than done. My God, Aaron Donald. Oh my God, Ben Garland versus Aaron Donald. Oh my God, no. We'll see what happens, man. But yeah, you know, keep hope alive, as the good Reverend Jackson would say.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.